Basically, my presentation today is actually going to have three parts to it. There's actually three subjects that I talk about. I've been with public health for a little over 20 years, and in that capacity, I've been a nurse and done a lot of different things. But in the last 2 years, I'm actually in emergency preparedness. And in emergency preparedness, we talk about something called the City's Readiness Initiative. And with that comes the problem of having to vaccinate your county within 48 hours. So what we did was, with this particular influenza project, is we tried to incorporate that philosophy of mass vaccinating a population in 48 hours. And we were successful with doing that in the public school setting in 2 days. And that was quite a lot of work. A little bit of background, because another piece of my presentation involves actually the whole state of Maryland participating in an influenza project with the nasal spray vaccine. Every county in the state of Maryland participated in this project between the 2005-2006 influenza season. Well, I will talk a little bit about this, but also more specifically about Harford County, where I am from in Maryland, and what we did that was perhaps a little bit different from other counties. The state of Maryland actually had two school-based pilot projects that we looked at in terms of examples of how we might accomplish it in each county. The results did show a decrease in student and staff absenteeism due to influenza-like symptoms, and this could be caused by direct immunization, and also indirectly. A lot of kids in the elementary schools had brothers or sisters in the middle or high school setting, and therefore the spread of the influenza was limited because the younger folks who do have poor personal hygiene tend to be vaccinated and tend to not cause the spread of the disease. In April of 2006, the health officers did agree to recommend to participate in this statewide influenza project. We did target the 5 to 11-year-olds. There was an estimated of 500,000 of them in the state of Maryland. There would be no charge to parents, with the cooperative agreement between the VFC program as well as MedImmune. There was no charge to the local school or health department, and it was exercising mass vaccination. In August 2006, the MedImmune state and the CDC did agree to support the project, and there are 24 local health departments in the state of Maryland. In September of 2006, the governor did announce the project. Briefly, I just wanted to let you know that part of the process in terms of making this happen was the formation of a letter of agreement. Because we are a state agency and we cannot accept funds, what we did was we had a letter of agreement drawn up between MedImmune and the counties themselves. Actually, in Harford County, we had the school system act as the other partner, and we were acting on behalf, the health department was acting on behalf of the school system. So we received it, but we were not actually in the actual agreement. Harford County itself presented the project to the superintendent, school health council, the county executive, the school board, and the PTA. The county executive did agree to contribute $48,000 more, and I'll tell you why in a second. We did do a joint press release, Public Health Matters Radio, Back to School Night as advertisement. We sent permission letters home to parents. There was a relatively short turnaround because the announcement of the state project came very close to the beginning of the flu season. The Board of Physicians was asked about extending the ability to have volunteers that did not have a medical background to administer the flu mist or the nasal spray vaccine, and they denied that. So therefore, we scrambled to identify partners. And part of those partners, I did want to include some of the partners that we incorporated into the Harford County project, which was actual private nurse staffing agency that already had a contract with the school system. We had a nurse from the local community college. We had the State of Maryland, University of Maryland School of Nursing. Upper Chesapeake, which is our local hospital, contributed nurses as well. The short turnaround, as I discussed, a scramble to identify partners, and then there was an in-service training, which included a how to operate an 800 megahertz radio, and this was part of our emergency preparedness training, anaphylactic policy, how to use the EpiPens, and how to administer the flu nasal spray vaccine. First day of administration was October the 12th, 2007. Minimal disruption to educational experience. What we tried to do is have the schools set up a schedule similar to taking photos in the school setting. to bring classes in as a group. Mass prophylaxis was done on a large scale. Again, I talked about that with the city's readiness initiative. One unique thing that Harford County did do is we not only included the public schools, we included the private school as well as homeschool children. Any child in the public school system that was not eligible to receive the nasal spray vaccine did receive the injectable vaccine, and this was at the cost to the school system. The school also paid for the teachers and the school staff in the public system to receive vaccination. The goal was to reduce absenteeism and indirectly impact the rates of disease in the high-risk population. Many people in the high-risk population are not vaccinated to capacity. If we can vaccinate kids in the school setting to really reduce the spread of the disease, we are also helping those in the high-risk category. And then to develop a cost-effective intervention, which really is trying to target those students who would not go to a physician, would at least get it in the school setting. Tasks for schools, we had them send home an introductory parent or guardian letter, as well as the first dose consent form. We had the school nurses actually do the screening of the forms and report the number of students to be vaccinated. We had the school nurses were an integral part of this process. We could not have done it without them. We really developed a close partnership with this as a result of this project. We had to complete the classroom schedule, which was very similar to picture-taking time. We had them identify two vaccination areas in case we found if one was not suitable, we would have another one to choose from. We had an envelope of consents that they placed in the teacher's mailbox the day prior, the noon prior to the day of vaccination. And we had them identify some school volunteers. I'd just like to say a little bit about volunteers. The first time we did this project in the 2006-2007 season, we had a lot of volunteers. We did this the next season and we had a lot less volunteers. We were able to do the same amount of work with less people. Volunteers are great, but sometimes if you have a few people that really know what they're doing, you can accomplish the same thing. Teachers handed the consents to the children. In this respect, we tried to identifying the children. We felt like the volunteer could actually watch the students that weren't being vaccinated and have the teachers actually accompany the children to the vaccination area. Therefore, that would make the consent go with the right student because they know the students. And then we also asked the schools to assist us in just providing lunch for our teams as they went out. This is an example of the classroom schedule that we used. We did have a class scheduled every 5 minutes. They didn't believe us that we could do it in 5 minutes each class, but believe it or not, it can be done. We did purchase for the project, we actually purchased a large freezer, 24.9 cubic freezer, and we did have to purchase 10,200 doses, which we did keep in the freezer, and use two different types of thermometers to monitor the temperature. This is an example of the supply list that we actually had the teams. We had actually 16 teams that went out during those 2 days of the first dose of vaccination. And this is an example of some of the supplies that we had them use. And this is the process of organizing the teams. Basically what we did is to provide them with a bin with all their supplies. The box was actually used to put the consents in, and each one had their own cooler that, and all had their own team number written on each item. This is actually our floor plan for the nasal spray influenza vaccine administration. We had the table set up. The students came to the table. The teachers handed them the consents. They handed the nurses the consents. The nurses double-checked the consents and then reviewed it. There was a couple of issues that might have been why they wouldn't receive vaccination, and that might be the student refused. We were not going to force them to receive the vaccination. If there was a problem with the consent, it wasn't signed by the parent or it wasn't completed, or if any of the answers were no and it didn't look like that they were eligible. We had stickers that the nurses actually placed on the consents with the vaccine lot number and their initial. And then we had, after they received the vaccination, they had an assistant that took the tissues from the students and did some hand sanitizer before they left the room. We had three examples of that made up three job duties in the team. The first was the team leader. They actually checked in at the school office, gave the teachers the envelopes, which actually had the letters that would go home with students after they received the vaccination to let them know probably some of the side effects they would experience. They would radio to incident command. We did use an emergency type setup, so we had an incident command setup. 800 megahertz radio was used, and they radioed their results in every 30 minutes on a count, a student count, how fast the vaccination was taking place. If a child was not vaccinated or if there was an issue about vaccination, they would contact the incident command where a physician would be available to answer any questions. We had the vaccination nurse, and the picture indicates just another picture of the supplies that were taken. They actually checked the child's consent, handed the child the tissue, administered the vaccine, and applied their vaccine lot sticker with their initial on it. The assistant, again, asked them to throw the tissue away. They did the hand sanitizer and offered them a sticker if they wanted one. This is an example of the incident command setup. And on the wall, you can see an example of our data sheet. Basically, we just tracked the team's progress, had them call in their vaccination process every 30 minutes to see if we would need to send them any more assistance so that they would be able to complete the job within the time allotted. And this is a more detailed picture of the data tracking system. Basically, it goes over who's in the team, the call-in number, the number of vaccines sent, and the percent of students that were vaccinated according to what the school actually told us the number would be. And this is an example of the actual data sheet with every half hour increments. We have 44 schools that we did vaccinate, 33 were public and 11 were private. We have 17,933 elementary school students in Harford County. 9,003, actually 50% of our students participated. 13,258 vaccinations were given, that's first dose and second dose. We had 1,734 teachers and staff that were vaccinated in the public schools. We used approximately 190 staff, and those are our staff members, but again, I want to reiterate, we repeated the project again the next year and used much less volunteers. Actual cost to us was $21,700. And the average throughput on our first day was 981 students per hour, and we had 16 teams, so that's including all 16 teams and how many people we were able to get through. The second day was a little bit less because we actually had less students in terms of vaccinating on that particular day. For the Maryland results, we had more than 86,500 first and second doses given to the 5 to 11-year-old population. The influenza clinics were held at 600 schools statewide. Flu vaccine provided to more than 100 private providers. In Harford County, we did not do that, but in some counties, they did use their private providers. Some counties, and that would be Harford County, we vaccinated over 40% of our 5 to 11-year-olds in our school setting. We did have some private provider resistance, and we attribute that to really our just push for time at the beginning of the first year that we did this. In the second year that we did this, we then send letters home to private providers, and they were much more accepting of the project and very supportive. We do need to get more support, I think, early on in a project like this. If this is the first time you do it, you want to make sure that everybody's on board and that really everybody understands what you're doing. And that's why a lot of parents called the doctors the first year. They really did not understand the vaccination. It was a new vaccination. They had a lot of questions. One issue at the very bottom there is, who do I send my flu vaccine bill to? Initially, the nasal spray vaccine was not covered by insurance. However, I believe approximately 94% of all insurance companies today are providing coverage for the vaccine. Advanced planning is critical. If you're going to do it on this kind of magnitude, if you're going to do it in 2 days, there is a lot of planning. And even just making sure that your relationships are great with the schools, that is a key in terms of cooperating with the school system. User-friendly materials, make sure the parents feel comfortable with the consent forms. We did have some questions the first year. We redeveloped it the second year and had a lot fewer questions. And really respect those school nurses. They're the ones who really made this happen for Harford County. Nursing and parent volunteers are helpful, especially the staff in the schools. If they could not get parent volunteers, the school system used circulating staff that didn't have to be in the classroom, and they really helped out a lot. Initially, the parents did speak out. They had a lot of questions. The second year we did it, they were really on board. They liked the fact that it was a free vaccine. And really, we had a critical issue when you're ordering the vaccine initially for a large project such as this. Try to get some accurate numbers from your school nurses when they do those consents and figure out who can get it and who can't. That concludes the presentation. I did include Greg Reed. He was our coordinator at the state level. If you have any questions, he would be the person to contact. Thank you.
Our floor is now open. Please come to the microphone with your questions or comments.
Thank you. Those were two great presentations. Just a couple of quick questions. With regard to your effort, I might have missed it. Did you immunize teachers and other staff at the school in addition to the kids? That was the first question. And the second is,
sometimes, and yes, with TIV.
Okay. And the second for both of you is, did you accept telephone consent in any situations?
There were some reports that some programs accepted telephone consents. It was not a popular feature.
Okay. And if it was accepted, it was with a witness hearing the consent in addition to the...
I would presume.
Okay.
If we had any issues during the vaccination process, the school nurse would contact the parent or the guardian, and we would have issues resolved at that time. Okay. That was basically our telephone experience. Okay.
I mean, typically it was, oh my God, I forgot to sign this. I found this form today. Today's the day it's supposed to happen, yada, yada.
Right. So they would come charging in and sign it usually, I guess.
Or they would come charging through the phone and sign it that
way. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Please.
Hi. my question is for you, Richard, because I think none of these programs would be possible without the cooperation and consent of the schools. And I wondered whether in actually doing your survey, if you were able to ascertain what the impression and, feeling were at the level of either the principals or the superintendents, and that feedback would be valuable as well. Obviously, if they don't let you in, you're not going to do the program.
No, you're so right. Yeah. We asked specifically about that, and we had several questions organized around that. To get permission to get into the schools in the first place, in most cases it was a superintendent decision, and it was a positive one, but it had to be nurtured and discussed. Then to get it actually rolling in the school, it was a matter of both the principal and the office staff being on board. But the foot in the door was the superintendent in most cases.
Yeah, I'm just a comment because Harford County is where I used to work, actually. I was the health officer in Harford County before I joined MedImmune. And one of the things that was really significant and I think has some impact is that the superintendent for Harford County has now put this in her annual budget to pay for the vaccine. So she has, Lisa, like $300,000 allotted in her annual budget to buy vaccine so that nobody has to be charged. They can keep doing the program in perpetuity. Now, that may be one example, but at least I think it sort of highlights the value to the schools and the consistency with their mission as well as the public health mission.
Bravo.
Something nobody has mentioned, and I have a history of extreme fear of needles, but what kind of prelims did you do with the kids to reduce the fear that they're going to get a shot, if any?
We found the most effective thing was not to talk too much. Basically, the more you talk to the kid, the more the anxiety builds. So basically, we were telling them, when I gave the vaccine, basically I was telling them to smell a flower. And basically that worked, because the young kids between the 5 and 11-year-old don't know what sniff means. But if you tell them to smell something, instinctively they're smelling up.
I wanted to ask actually both of you whether you attempted to notify the primary care physician or put the information into the registry about the children who received the vaccine.
On our letter home to the parents, we recommended that they do contact the physician so that they could document the fact that they did receive the influenza vaccination. We personally did not have enough time to contact each and every private provider, but we did recommend that the parent contact the provider.
We asked specifically about that in our phone survey, and I'm trying to remember what the summary results were. As I recall, though, there was only one program that specifically contacted the local provider.
Right.
Most of them gave some kind of a slip back to the child to take to the parent who could then call the provider. And a few of them had registries that right. they entered in, not on the spot, but, you know, they go back to the health department and then enter.
Yeah, I've done a national survey of physicians about this, and their number one consideration is being notified directly or through a registry.
I will just add one more point. The school nurses did copy all of the consents of the students in their school and did put it in their medical records at the school.
You know, I think the issue with the registry, and that's a very important, but, you know, now we're looking at all grade school kids, and I'm not sure if all state registries are equipped for that. But as a pediatrician, I sympathize with your position.
Sorry. We actually heard a really impressive presentation by Louisiana about their real-time 27,000 doses in 6 hours that they did in their mass immunization, and they used an internet wireless connection, and they had real-time uploading from all their sites into their main registry and was able to track it. You showed a graph or a table of how many doses you were able to do, but you did that all by hand later on after you tallied those by paper, right?
Well, basically it was done on an Excel spreadsheet, so when they called in the numbers with the Excel spreadsheet kind of just popped up and kept the running total as they entered in the data.
So you had someone on the side doing that as they went through?
We had somebody calling. We would do a call. They would do a call in to our incident command on the 800 megahertz radio, and at the 30-minute check, they would call in their number, and we would enter it in on the data sheet at our incident command. Okay. So we had one central location doing it for all the teams.
Okay. One other question. Does anybody have any experience with self-administered one? I know they didn't want to let some non-physician do it or non-nurse do it, but, you know, we have kids doing all kinds of nasal sprays and illicit drugs and other things, especially as you get into the older groups.
You mean having the kids administer their own?
Yeah.
No.
Likewise, no.
Okay.
Reminds me of, like, eye drops, you know, you get those problems. Ma'am.
Just had one other quick question for both of you. You've got impressive coverage rates for what you did. Was there an assessment either prior to or after of the big picture with regard to flu coverage? In other words, those kids who had already been protected against flu with the shot, so that you knew how much you were adding on to? You know, like, was there a 10 or 20 or whatever percent background coverage rate already in the schools? Do you have any sense of that?
We didn't ask and didn't receive any information about that. Nothing was volunteered, and I suspect it'd be tough to get that information.
I agree.
Okay. Other questions, issues? Please.
Hi, Crystal Taylor from University of Rochester. I just had a question for you, Richard, regarding the vaccination rate of the middle and high school students. Do you feel that that the lower rate had to do with the consenting process? Because for the elementary school students, you were utilizing, you know, backpack, you know, basically teachers and backpacks, whereas with the middle and high school, they were just mailed. So do you think that
Yeah, I really do. Some of this is anecdotal, but putting the pieces together, they were mailed. There was not follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
If in the cases where it was given to the student to take home, like I said, I got teenagers. Those of you with teenagers in the audience, you know what happens. It just doesn't get there. So I think the combination of the parent not being, you know, right on it and the lack of follow-up were a real problem. And again, this is at a time when flu vaccine was allowed, but, you know, not recommended at the ACIP level. So maybe we'll see some change in the next couple of years. I certainly hope so. I think we're going to have the academies of family practice and pediatrics and other professional organizations support the concept of broad scale vaccination, whether it's in a mass vaccination clinic or in their office or whatever. Then we may see more of a shift and eventually a normalization, I hope.
Thank you.
Thank you.